Api
even
Turaptakati
Turaptakati
a goal hard to achieve.
A goal hard to achieve.
Surasai
Surasai
and by the rulers of the demigods.
And by the rulers of the demigods.
Chindi
Chindi
knees cut.
Ashu
quickly.
Quickly.
Na,
na, na
owl.
Sutta
for children.
Kalatra,
wife.
Dana,
wealth.
Wealth.
Apta,
worthy
friends.
Friends.
Geha,
home.
Deha,
body.
Adi,
and so on.
Moha,
of illusion.
Rasanam,
the ropes.
Bhavadiya,
your own.
Mayam,
illusory material energy.
Translation by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is by our great fortune, Janardana, that you are now visible before us. For even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty. Please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home and body. All such attachments is simply the effect of your illusory material energy. Next verse. Iti yaratatni. Iti yacharati samstutascha bhaktena bhagavan hari akuram sasmityam preha gurbi samohayan eva. Sukadev Goswami continued, thus, worshipped and fully glorified by his devotee, the Supreme Lord Hari smilingly addressed Akura, completely charming him with his words. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Tamno Guru Pritrivascha Shlagyo Bandascha Nityada Vayam Tu Raksya Posyascha Anukampya Prajahivaha. The Supreme Lord said, you are our spiritual master, paternal uncle, and praiseworthy friend. And we are like your sons, always dependent on your protection, sustenance, and compassion. Text 30. Bhavadvida Mahabhaga Nisevya Arhasattama Shreyas Kamir Nibi Nityam Devasvartanasandava. Exalted souls like you are the true objects of service and the most worshipful authorities for those who desire the highest goal in life. Demigods are generally concerned with their own interests, but saintly devotees never are. Purport. Whereas demigods may award material benefit, saintly devotees of the Lord have the power to award the real perfection of life, Krishna consciousness. Thus, Lord Krishna reinforces the respectful mood that he has adopted here towards his uncle Akura. And we'll read one more verse. Nahi am mayani tirtani na deva michala maya te punanti yuro kalena darshanad eva sadhava. No one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers, or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone. But these purify the soul only after a long time, whereas saintly persons purify just by being seen. Om jnana timanandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha vanchakalpa turubhyascha kripa sindhubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in these verses, Akrura has finished his prayers to Krishna. And now Krishna is responding. And there's lots of nice points in these verses, which teach us many things about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the culture of Krishna consciousness, and the character of the great souls and the nature of the path. So the first verse we read, which is the one on the board, Akrura is explaining or praying to Krishna that the fact that he is visible before him, that is a great thing and a very rare thing that is not often achieved even by great transcendental yogis and demigods and very elevated personalities. So he is appreciating with gratitude the fortune that he has. Of course, as a devotee, he doesn't feel like, oh yes, I'm very qualified, therefore I'm experiencing this. Now, he's always, even though he is qualified, and that's why Krishna is agreeing to appear before him, still he has that attitude of gratitude, and respect, feeling very fortunate, because in that state, that's a very wonderful state. The state of gratitude, and we should always cultivate that in our life as well for what we have in Krishna consciousness. If you can always be thankful, then you are always happy, you know? And then he says, please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home and body. So of course both Mahamaya and Yogamaya are energies of Krishna. And there's one verse in Bhagavad Gita from chapter 7 where Krishna says, Devi hi shugunamayi mama maya jaratiya mam eviye prapajante maya itam tarantite. That the energy of this world, the illusory energy, is very difficult to overcome. It's very powerful because Krishna is very powerful. And but one who surrenders unto me, he can cross beyond that. So Akrura, of course, he's a pure devotee, so this doesn't really apply to him, but he's still praying, you know. I am attached to my situation in this material world, you know. I have a wife, I have a family, I have children, I have a house, I have a place that I come from. I have influential friends, and I'm kind of ensnared by this. My mind constantly wanders back and forth over all these temporary duties that I have in relation to these things, these temporary things, I, me, and mine. And he says that I would like to be free from this. And you can free me because you are the Supreme Lord and it's your energy. It's your illusory material energy. That's what he says. So this is always a prayer that the devotees should pray. I generally pray three prayers in the morning to each of the altars we have here. I pray to Gauri Nitai that please empower the preaching of Krishna consciousness and our efforts to do that. I pray to Radha Vallabha that I may be achieve pure devotional service if I can achieve that. And I pray to Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra to free me from all impediments to that. So to pray to be freed from impediments to pure service to the Lord as demonstrated by Akrura, that's very bona fide and that's good. And we should always feel that Maya is very close. And Maya is very pervasive. And there's a big danger there for Maya to swamp our consciousness. Prabhupada said there's only one difference between me and my disciples, and that is the degree to which I fear Maya. He's saying that my disciples oftentimes they don't fear Maya enough. They don't realize the threat of Maya. So I'm always praying, he said, please, Krishna, don't let me fall into Maya. So that is a bona fide prayer. But of course, then in the next verse, we hear that Krishna, pleased by these prayers, smiled and addressed Akrura, completely charming him, casting a spell. And what does Krishna do? He says, you are our spiritual master, paternal uncle, and praiseworthy friend, and we are like your sons, always dependent on your protection, sustenance, and compassion. So Krishna kind of like, he's given, Akrura's just said all these prayers about Krishna being the Supreme Lord, and Krishna like, anyway, you are our uncle. He favors this, he wants to push this point, this rasa. And we see Krishna does that many times. You see when Mother Yashoda was looking into the mouth of Krishna, due to Krishna's being accused by Balaram and the other friends of Krishna when they're playing, he's like, Krishna's been eating dirt. And Mother Yashoda looked into his mouth to prove that, or to verify that. And she saw the universe. And then she started to, she got a little bit bewildered by that, and she started to speculate, what is the cause of this? And she never came to the conclusion that it's because Krishna is the Supreme God, but after a while she started to pray to Krishna, that she started to pray to Vishnu, that, I'm so attached. I think Nanda Maharaj is my husband. I think the residents of Vrindavan are my, citizens, subjects. And I think Krishna and Balaram, my children, he said, this is the illusory energy of the Lord, illusory energy of you, Vishnu. I'm sorry that I'm so in Maya. And Krishna said, anyway, enough of that, and covered her again. And then she just looked down at Krishna, forgot everything, and just thought, this is my beautiful young son, and proceeded to embrace Krishna. And there's another time when after Krishna, quite recently actually, killed King Kamsa in the wrestling arena. And then everybody was free from the oppression of this demon. And then Krishna thought, now I must go and see my real parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. And he went into their presence to satisfy them. And they immediately stood up with folded hands and said, oh, this is the Supreme Lord. And started to offer reverential prayers. And then Krishna said, well, enough of that. And covered them with yoga maya. And also spoke in a very charming way and said, no, you are our real parents. And you weren't able to enjoy our childhood. Normally the parents, they relish the childhood activities of the children, the awkward movements and the sweet voice and the amusing, entertaining activities. Normally that's relished by the parents, but you didn't get to do that. And in this way he pulled his yogamaya energy over them, and they just thought, oh, these are our children. And immediately took them on their laps, and they're big boys now, and started crying. So we see Krishna does that. And according to the role that the personality of Godhead is playing in a particular incarnation, often he wants to keep that role, Like also we see Lord Chaitanya. He's Krishna himself. And the devotees knew that. And sometimes they would accuse him. I know who you are. You are the Supreme Lord. And Lord Chaitanya would say, stick his fingers in his ears and say, Vishnu, Vishnu! Because he didn't want to He didn't want to, that's not the role he was playing. And also, playing a role as a devotee, he also wanted to give the example that no devotee should ever suggest that he is the Supreme Lord. One should deny that. No, I'm not the Lord, I'm a servant of the Lord. So, this wonderful exchange is going on. And then it proceeds. Krishna begins to explain some philosophy as well, while continuing in the same vein. He says, exalted souls like you are the true objects of service and the most worshipful authorities for those who desire the highest good in life. Demigods are generally concerned with their own interests, but saintly devotees never are. And then he says, no one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers, or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone. But these purify the soul only after a long time, whereas saintly persons purify just by having seen. Just by being seen. This Krishna is explaining the power of the devotee. When one worships and serves the devotee, that is the most powerful agent for purifying the heart and delivering Krishna consciousness. To serve the devotees. And Krishna pushes this point. So what we see here is that there is a wonderful exchange between the Lord and the devotee. The devotee has been glorifying the Lord, and now the Lord is glorifying the devotee. So it's a wonderful exchange. There's a bit of a competition going on. Even we see, in the early days of Krishna consciousness in Australia, there was Madhudwis Swami, who was very inspiring to the devotees. He led Rompa Stompa Kirtans and obviously gave very awesome, very good classes, and inspired the devotees greatly, and he was also good at organizing things as well. And Prabhupada was very happy with the service he was doing. And one time there was a big Ratha Yatra here in Melbourne, huge calf festival for the Lord. And Prabhupada was there. He came to that festival and they pulled the carts. It was funny actually, because they had a big mission to get the carts done. And that, because of their underhand, sneaky Sankirtan methods, they were in a lot of trouble with the city council. In fact, they had like reams and reams of unpaid fines, you know, adding up to thousands and thousands of dollars. And the city council wasn't happy with them at all. And they wanted to hold this parade, and of course you have to get the benediction or the boon of the city council to be able to do that. Otherwise, you get in big trouble. So Madhudwi Swami, freshly shaved up in a sannyasi outfit, he went down to the city council to confirm that they're allowed to do it. And they said, well, you guys haven't been very cooperative with us. We've tried to pass all the, we've tried to tell you what we want, what we don't want you to do, and you just keep doing it. In fact, there's so many fines here. They went on and on like this. We're very disappointed. This is very uncooperative. Your behavior, your conduct is illegal according to our state policy, etc., etc. And Madhudwi Swami said he started to get quite a little bit depressed, because they put so much effort into this Ratha Yatra preparation, and they're thinking now it won't go ahead. And Prabhupada's here as well. So what are we going to do? And then they said, so, what do you have to say for yourself after all that? And Madhudwi Swami said, he just said, prayed to Krishna and said, please let me say the right things. And he said, yes, he verified their feelings, validated them. This is this psychological technique, is you validate the person's feeling. Yes, you have every right to feel like that. We have done this, we have done that. We're rascals, we're very disobedient, we're trying, we're trying to achieve a certain mission, and sometimes we stand on toes and we're so sorry about that, we're trying to improve. Like this, they took a humble position. And then what he did, he pleaded for mercy in an Australian way. he said. But I guess, you know, what we're really just asking you guys to do is give us a fair go. Please just give us a fair go. And they said, that's a significant request, you know, in Australia. If somebody asks you to give them a fair go, that means something, you know. So that, and this put the city authorities in a position where they had, you know, the powers in their hands. They can either condemn or grant mercy. So they sat back and they said, all right, we'll give you a fair go. Somebody responded, and left. And anyway, the parade went on, and it was a beautiful parade. They did actually, they stipulated that you guys have to put in hydraulic, you know, this parade's in a few days, you know, Rathi Yatra's in a few days, but you guys have to redo the brakes, put in hydraulic brakes, put in, redo the steering, and clad the wheels so they don't chew up the road, you know. You gotta put rubber around the wheels. So, you know, in the middle of the night, they put in the hydraulic brakes, and then in the middle of the night, they took it up to a very steep street somewhere here in Melbourne, the three rough carts, and they had to pull them down the hill against the brakes. And all the policemen were there in overalls and stuff, with torches going around, and they passed everything. So they were allowed to go ahead with the parade. The carts were given the safety stamp. These are okay. And so anyway, the parade went ahead, and it was big festival going down Collins Street. Prabhupada was there, and he chanted and danced the whole way, and they distributed lots of prasadam, and then they arrived at I'm not sure where it was, but some big covered courtyard area where they could actually bring the carts in. And Prabhupada spoke, and there was prasadam, and Madhudri Swami had organized all these booths where people could go in and learn about philosophy and get prasadam, lots of different activities, like a little festival or fairground, Krishna conscious fairground. And anyway, Prabhupada was very happy with this. And he went back to his, you know, after staying and surveying the whole setup and giving a talk, he went back to his quarters where he was staying. And later that day, Madhudri Swami came back and he entered the room. And Prabhupada spontaneously threw up his arms and said, Madhudri Swami ki jai! Madhudri Swami ki jai! Madhudri Swami ki jai! And this was, that's pretty amazing, you know. For Prabhupada, some who the devotees respect so much, you know, then glorifying his disciple, you know, like that. Madhudri Swami Maharaj ki jai. You know, he was very very thankful for his disciple for doing that. And very also, you know, Prabhupada thought this is a great devotee, you know, for having, you know, done such nice service to Krishna. This is a great devotee. Prabhupada was also. So there's two things going on there. You know, there's the spiritual master has to play the role of a master. That's important. Sometimes, you know, coming from the Western country where we're not so good with authority, because we haven't had such good experience with authorities, we think the spiritual master should be our friend. You know, he should be like you know, you come along and you say Hari Bol, Gurudev, and he should be hug, you know, smiles and stuff. And the Russia should be one of more like friendship. But this is not actually the case, because that's not good for the disciple. The disciple might become familiar. Actually, the spiritual master should be master. And once I asked my Gurudev, you know, I was walking along with him humbly, and he was, you know, occasionally said something, but most of the time remained silent, so I was kind of walking along. And I got back, we got back to the apartment where he was staying. I was staying with him. And I asked him, he was just going up the stairs, because he was upstairs, I was downstairs. And I said, Gurudev, what is the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master? And he just laughed and looked at me and said, servant. And then ascended the stairs very nonchalantly. I was like, okay. So that's actually the service of the spiritual master. Of course, the spiritual master, being an elevated devotee, does not think himself to be extraordinarily wonderful or special. He simply thinks, I am a humble servant of the Lord. But for the benefit of this, for the conditioned souls, he will assume the role of master or authority. And it's a service, and you should play that with integrity. That role, and the disciples should assume the lower role, because it's through, just like we see in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and he said to Krishna, "You know, Krishna, go and drive my chariot between the armies. I want to see the Kurus assembled here to fight." And Krishna, you know, he was playing the role of the chariot driver. He was Arjuna's best friend. They were practically the same age. They'd done so many things together. They were good friends. And preceding the war, both Duryodhana and Arjuna had gone to see Krishna to try and get his help. And Arjuna, being a devotee, you know, he immediately went to the feet, because Krishna was sleeping at the time. He went to the foot of the bed, and Duryodhana went to the head of the bed, thinking that when Krishna wakes up, I'll be right here. And Krishna woke up in due course of time, and he looked down and saw Arjuna standing at his feet. He said, "Oh, Arjuna, Hare Krishna." and then he saw Duryodhana, and he said, "Oh, Duryodhana, how can I serve you?" He said to both of them, "He said, we have both have come to solicit your help in the great war to come." Because by this time the Kurukshetra war was inevitable. And I said, Krishna said, "Okay, sure. Here's the deal. One of you can have me, but I won't fight. And the other can have my armies, which will fight. And my armies are very extensive." And Arjuna, since he's younger, and I saw him first, he can have first choice. And Duryodhana's going, "Oh, no. This is the problem." And Arjuna just immediately said, "Krishna, no question about it, I want you." And Duryodhana went, "Yes!" Because he was thinking, what's the use of this Krishna if he won't fight? Yeah. He's got so many nice soldiers, I'll take them. So they're both very happy. So this is Krishna. Arjuna said, "Okay, you won't fight, but please drive my chariot." And Krishna assented. He said, "Yes, I'll do that for you." So this is a glorified form of Krishna, chariot driver of Arjuna. And we even read in Chaitanya Charitamrita about the illiterate Brahmana that Lord Chaitanya came across. And he was illiterate, but he was reading Bhagavad Gita. And he didn't even read Bhagavad Gita upside down. He'd read Bhagavad Gita upside down. And all the other brahmanas and local people, they'd ridicule him and say, "There's this fool, you know, trying to read Bhagavad Gita when he can't even read. He's got the book upside down. He's wasting his time, you know." And Lord Chaitanya came and saw this brahmana. He saw that he had tears in his eyes, and he said, "Oh, my dear brahmana, what are you reading?" And he said, "I'm reading Bhagavad Gita." And he said, "But actually, I must say, good sir, that I can't read." "But still, I'm reading." He said, Lord Chaitanya said, "Where do you get your determination to do this?" He said, "I'm simply following the order of my spiritual master." He said, "You read Bhagavad Gita daily." So, just out of reverence for my spiritual master, I'm performing this activity. And he said, and Lord Chaitanya said, "But you have tears in your eyes. What is your experience?" He said, "Dear sir, I can't read this book. But every time I turn the pages, all I see is that beautiful picture of Krishna driving Arjuna's chariot. And I simply think, you know, how merciful is the Lord." So this was what Krishna was doing, is driving the chariot of Arjuna. And Arjuna said to him, "Please take this chariot between the two armies." And Krishna kind of said, "Sure." Took the chariot through, and then he said, "What?" As if to say, "What did you expect, Arjuna?" He said, "Behold, the Kurus assembled here, with whom you must fight." Arjuna saw these. He saw Bhishma Devi, he saw Drona Acharya, he saw Kripa Acharya. He saw the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, and he was thinking, "I have to fight with these family members, these teachers, these worshipful personalities. I can't do it." And he became overwhelmed with anxiety and compassion. And And he proceeded to say, Krishna, you know, this war is wrong because of this, that. I don't want to be a part of it because of this, that, and the other thing. And Krishna just said, Arjuna, snap out of it. You know, this does not become you, this show of compassion. You are a Kshatriya. This is a war based on religious principles. This is what you should be doing. This is your dharma. What is this sentimentalism that has overtaken your consciousness? It's nonsense. Snap out of it. And Arjuna said, No, Krishna. I have good reason for feeling how I do. And then he proceeded to give more arguments. And Krishna just said, you know, listening to the arguments. And then Arjuna worked himself up to such a state. He said, oh, you know, I'm overwhelmed now with compassion and with I'm confused about what I should do. Due to my state, my bow Gandiva is slipping from my hand. I'm completely confused about my duty. I'm bewildered by various conflicting emotions. And then he said, oh Krishna, please instruct me. I am now a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So at that point the relationship changed. Well, they were no longer friends, you know, because before they were friends, and Arjuna thought, oh, he's my friend, I can argue with him, you know. He makes a point, I make a point. Both our points are equal. But then Arjuna realized there was no freeing himself by his own argument from his state. He then surrendered to Krishna. And then the relationship changed. Krishna assumed the position of master, and Arjuna assumed the position of disciple, and the instruction went on. Then Arjuna would hear submissively, inquire submissively, and Krishna was able to impart the instruction. So this is the relationship, master and servant, and it's conducive for the disciple to receive spiritual instruction in this mood. Otherwise, if he thinks that I am equal, I can argue, then there's no there's little chance of the spiritual master's instructions really striking the heart of the disciple. So there should be, this is the rasa for that reason. But you see, Prabhupada, you know, for a moment he dropped that. And he said, you know, this is my dear disciple who's done such nice service, and he just glorified and spontaneously. Madhu Dvi Swami Ki Jai. So, this is the beautiful exchanges that take place between devotees and between the Lord and so forth. It's complex, you know. There's an etiquette there, and sometimes that's dropped for the sake of love, and sometimes it's re-established. Many different... it's complex. And what we see here in these pastimes is that Krishna is glorifying his devotee. And actually saying, no, just forget about all that stuff about me being the Supreme Lord. You're my uncle. Therefore, you're worshipful for me. That's what he says. And he glorifies him. And then he gives some philosophy. So, very interesting. Now, this one interesting point I wanted to speak about today, and that's about the via medium. Because Krishna explains that pure devotee is like a via medium. By serving the pure devotee, one attains Krishna consciousness, or the highest perfection of good. Krishna, of course, doesn't say Krishna consciousness himself, because that would look egotistical. No, he says the highest perfection. He says, yeah, which of course is Krishna consciousness, God consciousness. And that's explained in the purport. He says you achieve that by serving the devotees. So in this way, the devotee is a via medium. And how is that so? It's because, it's also explained in this verse, that the devotee has no self-interest. You know, there's videos, you know, of devotees just coming up and dancing around Prabhupada and doing arati to him, and he's sitting there on the Vyasa sign, you know. And you see, he's not, there's no pride there at all. know, they're worshipping, they're having ecstatic kirtan. It's like the incredible glorification going on. Prabhupada's sitting there humbly on the Vyasa side, accepting the worship. He's not going, no. Sometimes devotees do that, you know. You say, oh, you're a very wonderful devotee, you inspire me. No. I'm not wonderful, I'm very lowly. But Prabhupada's not doing that, he's accepting the worship. He's doing his duty as the master to accept the worship of the disciples. That's a service, somebody needs to do that actually. But he has to be pure. But what is he doing? He's immediately surrendering it to his spiritual master and saying, this glorification is not for me. You know, it flows through him, up the disciple succession to Krishna. He's not blocking the way because he doesn't have the selfish interest. This is what it means to be a via medium. And every devotee has to do this ultimately, because all of us have relationships with seniors and juniors. And especially as we go on in Krishna consciousness, as we advance, junior devotees begin to look at us and say, you know, think that this person is very, this is a senior devotee there. And they see exalted qualities in the senior devotees. And they might think, I want to serve that devotee. But that devotee shouldn't take that service for himself. He should immediately pass it on. So if this idea of the via medium, the fact that the devotee doesn't have any selfish interest, very important. And that's the reason Krishna says, you know, he qualifies his statement. He gives reasoning to his statement. He says that the devotees are the true gateway to spiritual advancement, to spiritual perfection, the devotees. Why are the devotees there? Because they are not selfishly interested. They simply pass it on up, pass the service, the glorification on up. Because, you know, when people come to Krishna consciousness in this world, when we come to Krishna consciousness in the world, we can't detect Krishna directly. What we are attracted to is the devotees. Perhaps the philosophy, we're attracted to that. We're attracted to the kirtan, the prasadam, so many things. We've talked about this before. Everybody knows the attractive elements. So the main thing that bring all these things to life is the devotees. I mean, who's ever been to a kirtan? A good kirtan where there's no devotees? Huh? Can there be such a thing? No. Now, the kirtan, the holy name, it has to be resounded by the devotees to have any potency. If there's no devotees, then there's no kirtan. And prasadam has to be cooked by devotees. Everything takes place in the context of devotees. So people become attracted to the society of devotees, and the devotees represent Krishna to them. It's by the character of the devotees give an idea to the people of what Krishna is like. Therefore, if the devotees are very harsh and authoritarian, they think, oh, Krishna must be a very authoritarian God, you know. Like the God in the Bible, you see, is very authoritarian, he's autocrat, you know. You do this, otherwise I will send a plague to punish you. Huh? And this is one aspect of God, actually. But not necessarily the most attractive element. So anyway, the devotees represent, or give an idea of the character of Krishna to the people and to each other as well. So that's why the Sangha of devotees has to be very nice. There has to be the respect and the senior-junior relationships, but also that they must be conducted with great sensitivity. You know, there's one definition of success in spiritual life given by Dr. Boysen, who Ravindra Sharup does a study on. He does a lecture series studying the writings of Boysen, who did studies of schizophrenia and spiritual experience. And psychology of the spiritual aspirant. The main point he studied was the sense of personal failure that people naturally have who are trying to follow a very high ideal. There's a high ideal, you know, in Krishna consciousness we certainly have this, a high ideal. And then we have our current state. We're trying to always achieve this high ideal, but we're always falling short. And therefore, within ourselves, we feel a sense of personal failure. And this generates all sorts of psychological phenomena within us. And he did a very in-depth study of this poison and then wrote many things about it. And Ravindra Sharup presents a nice lecture series called The Cure of Souls. I have it if anybody wants it. Which studies all these different things, and it's very pertinent actually to what goes on in ISKCON. Boisen gave a very nice definition of faith, of success in spiritual life, sorry. He said that success in spiritual life means to be accepted into the society of those persons who you esteem most highly. Success means to be accepted into the society or the association of those persons who you esteem most highly. Yeah? That's a very good definition, especially for a personal faith, you know, for a personal spiritual life. That's what you ultimately want to achieve. You want to achieve and the association of Krishna's devotees to be accepted and feel like I am a part of the society. You know, that's within ISKCON, within this world, the great Vaishnavas, to be accepted by Prabhupada, to be accepted by the spiritual master, to be accepted by the spiritual community. And ultimately to be accepted into Goloki Vrindavan, into the society of the devotees in the spiritual world. That is success in spiritual life for them. And conversely, failure is to be rejected from that association. Or to feel oneself unqualified. You know, a devotee naturally feels unqualified, but to feel that I've really failed, you know, that's failure. So, this being the case, it's very important how we treat one another. You know, because there's two things going on. There's both the need to feel accepted for where we are, and for trying our best, if the sincerity is there, that should be recognized. We should always recognize the sincerity of our fellows, especially our juniors. You know? But then also there has to be another thing, is the standard can't be compromised. So it has to be you're accepted, but also has to be some attempt to come up. So that's very important. Very important. You see, the younger devotees always see the senior devotees as representing Krishna to them. So if the senior devotees are very condescending or judgmental or critical of the juniors, then the juniors, they feel that that's Krishna's attitude towards them. And they feel like, oh, I'm failing. Krishna is angry with me. It's actually very true. We may have analysed it and seen it, but it's actually the case, whether we've seen it or not. I have one friend, you know, coming along very sincere in Krishna consciousness, you know, struggling with a few things, and if he gets a harsh dealing from a senior devotee, it completely, or even if he perceives it as harsh, you know, the senior devotee might not have realised his influence in that person's life, and might have just said something, or been in a rushed mood or something, and given a harsh dealing, not intentionally, but that can actually throw the junior devotee into a pit of despair. You know, I'm trying to please Krishna and I'm failing. Why am I failing? Because I'm getting this. I feel condemned by this. I feel misunderstood, I feel condemned, and they take that as how Krishna feels with them. So that's important. Yeah, another point is, you know, yeah, the devotees have to represent Krishna, especially the senior devotees, especially leaders. They have to do that. That doesn't mean you have to be superhuman, but at least there should be three qualities, and that's integrity. Should be integrity. That one practices what preaches and what is honest. Honesty must be there as well. And also purity, which means like freedom from selfish desires. Because if you see somebody, you know, like one time Ravindra Sharup was saying, you know, he was out on Sankirtan. And in those days, going on Sankirtan was particularly humiliating because, you know, they had to dress in like bed sheets and all sorts of things, and people would like, you know, they weren't so set up as we are now, and they're also very new, so there was a lot of new society was often quite looked down on the devotees a bit. Anyway, he was out there, but still they'd go out with great determination every day for long hours. And this one man came up to Ravindasarupa and said, I've been watching you for a while, and I both admire and pity you. He already immediately assumes that superior kind of stance. And said, yeah, I admire you and I pity you. I admire you because you work so hard with such dedication. But I pity you because you're doing it all for that guy. And he pointed to a picture of Prabhupada on the Back to Godhead magazine. You're doing it all for that guy. And that guy's just sitting on the top and enjoying your hard work. So I pity you. Poor fools. But I admire your determination. But only if it was properly placed, you know, in service of yourself. And of course, Reverend Yusuf thought about that. And initially it affected him. But then he thought, you know, actually, we are working very hard for Prabhupada. But why are we doing that? Because actually Prabhupada's not sitting on the top. Prabhupada, to us, is the embodiment of Krishna consciousness. He is the greatest servant. He is doing more service with more dedication, with more love, and with more devotional meditation than we are. And he is guiding us how to do the same. So this was what Prabhupada embodied for the devotees. Inspired that. And that is what it means to be a via medium. I mean, if you do see that somebody becomes corrupt and they start utilizing the glorification and the material facility that's coming from their position for their own enjoyment, then that damages faith very greatly. Very greatly damages the faith of the followers. So therefore that purity must be there. Yeah, so we're all devotees. We're all responsible for being Krishna conscious. You know, especially if we want to preach and we want to spread the movement. And preaching doesn't just finish, you know, when somebody shaves their head or puts on a sari. You know, that's preaching doesn't finish. Preaching goes on and on and on until all the devotees are back at Godhead. So even in the temple, our sangha with one another, that's also preaching. We should not be harsh to one another. That preaching goes on until we're all perfect. So it's very important that we, you know, we embody the values, the ideals, the character of the devotee. We should take that very seriously, to conduct ourselves in a way that doesn't disturb the enthusiasm or the determination of one another. In fact, inspires that. Just one last point, you know, it's quite a funny point, you know, that on this definition of success, you know, success in spiritual life means to be accepted into the society of those who you esteem most highly. So sometimes certain religious people, they come up and they say, you must repent and come to heaven. If you do not repent, you will go to hell. And they say it in such a rude, sort of condescending and rough way, harsh way, that the common response that people make is, well, tell me about heaven. Are you going to be there? Yeah, I'll be there. They say, well, I'd rather be in hell. because like, to be around you is pretty hellish, you know, for me. So, really, that's what the devotee association has to not be like that. It has to be the opposite. Huh? Otherwise people would rather be somewhere else. Very beautiful exchange between Krishna and Akura. Krishna's now glorifying Akura and saying, you are the most worshipable for those who want to attain spiritual perfection, because you are a pure devotee and you have no selfish interest. So thank you so much. Any questions or comments on these points? What's Maya? Maya means that which is not. Sometimes, you know, the example is given a rope. You see a rope and you mistake it for a snake. And you become fearful. Huh? That which is not Maya. It also means another word that you might understand is illusion. Illusion. That's an illusion. When you see a rope and you think it's a snake and you develop an emotional reaction, oh my God, it's a snake. That's called illusion. You responded to the rope in a way that doesn't justify its reality. Because you thought something else. That's Maya. Maya means the illusory energy of the Supreme Being. For example, it's Maya to think you are the body. That's the fundamental feature of Maya. On the most basic level, we think I am the body. That means I am these senses, and to enjoy this body is the goal of life. That's the basic manifestation of Maya that pervades this world. Everybody thinks I am this body. What does that mean? I am a white man. I am a man and I'm white. And you know, somebody's thinking I am a woman. Somebody might be thinking I am black. I am white. I am brown. Whatever. I am yellow. Person. And therefore, there's a whole ego that goes with that. You know, a whole sense of self. But actually, no. That's not the truth. The truth is, Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. I am spirit soul. I am pure consciousness. And this body is simply a vehicle which I have got according to my past karma. So this whole world, you see, it's driven by this false ego, this false sense of self, or this Maya, you know, this misconception, this illusion. That's Maya. And it's that that divides countries to fight against one another, it divides people to fight against one another. Friends and enemies, this is also Maya. Maya is a very broad concept. It takes some time to understand what is Maya, or really understand what is Maya. But the goal of Krishna consciousness is to become free of Maya, to understand the true reality of things. Because that's the idea, there's an absolute truth. There is a reality. And most people are living in what's known as a non-reality. They've got false conceptions about what is life, what is this material world. They think that I will enjoy in this world. If I accumulate possessions and get a high position, then I will enjoy, I will get happiness. But actually that's not the case. Because what happens is there's so many impediments along the way, and eventually death comes, disease comes. The idea that I will enjoy this world is an illusion. It's Maya. So the Maya means to try and control and enjoy this world, thinking oneself the body. But then there's also another type of Maya, a spiritual Maya, which creates the spiritual world, where the devotees have the relationship with the Supreme Being. That's called Yoga Maya. For example, you have a body. That body was born. That body will die. It's a temporary reality. It doesn't exist always. It's a relative truth. It will only exist for so many years, and then it will disappear, decompose, and be a non-reality. Therefore, that's known as that's temporary. It's a manifestation of Maya. This whole material energy is a manifestation of Maya. But those who are enlightened, they don't see that, oh, here's this child, here's an adult, here is an animal, here is a black person, here is a white person. What they see is here are spirit souls, part and parcels of the Supreme Soul, and the true nature of each and every self is that they are a servant of the Lord. And this energy of this world is not here for my enjoyment, it's here for the service of the Lord, being the Lord's energy. Is that it?
So is it gender as well? Does not matter at
all? Well, there's two levels. In one sense, you know, bodily designations are an illusion. That means that you know, it's just like if you drive down a car and drive down the street, and one car is red and one car is black, or one car is, you know, one person's driving a car and the other person's driving a motorbike. They're both people, but they're driving different vehicles. Huh? But then, so therefore, you see the driver. You don't think, oh, because this person's car is run down, therefore they're a inferior person. You know, or because an old person is weak, you don't disrespect them. You still treat them as a spirit soul. It's from the spiritual platform. You treat everybody as spirit soul. To understand what that is. But in the other sense, you know, a lion or a tiger is also a spirit soul, right? There's also a living being within that body. The body happens to be a killing machine, but the body happens to entrance the living entity within that body to think, I want to eat blood, and it makes this soul act like that. But still, the enlightened soul doesn't say, well, that's therefore a horrid creature. No, they say, no, there's a spirit soul in that body. At the same time, understanding that, you don't go and embrace that lion, saying, oh, you're a spirit soul, and embrace the lion, because the lion, under the influence of Maya, will tear you to pieces.
I understand our impressions of other people, but with the faith, does Krishna see a difference in gender?
No.
Because
it's just... Well, that's because the body has a nature. If you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that even if you're enlightened and you understand yourself as spirit soul, you don't try and act differently from your bodily nature. You just perform your duty according to your temporary nature. But you do it in such a way that you're serving the Lord. So there's two things going on. You're doing your duty, like you might have a certain qualification, certain propensity, certain nature in terms of your body. You do that. Like, for example, men can't have children. A man might think, oh, there's no difference, I'll have children, you know, but he can't do that. Huh? A woman has to do that. That's because that's her power, that's her potency. So in that, in one sense, yeah, there is a difference on one level, but on another level, you know, all these duties can be done as a service to the Supreme. So even an enlightened soul still acts according to their body. It's just like if you're driving your car and you're thinking, anyway, there's no difference between my car and a helicopter, so therefore I'm just going to fly into the sky. You can't do that because of the limitation of the vehicle. Huh? So better to just act like a car and obey the road rules. You know? You might be transcendental. You understand? So the body has a certain nature. Just like the tiger or the lion has a certain nature, it will eat you if it gets the chance. So unless we're completely liberated, we still have to be serious about, you know, sex desire, for example, lust. When the sexes interact very freely, you know, then what that does is makes the consciousness attached to the body. Think, I am a man. The man thinks I am a man. The woman thinks I am a woman. And between us, we're experiencing romance or whatever, lust. And this intensifies the false ego. So therefore, even in a spiritual community, although women are spirit soul and men are spirit soul, there's still a culture and etiquette there to avoid the increase of the illusion, because we're trying to bring the illusion down. So therefore you have to deal, the fire is hot, so therefore you have to deal with it respectfully. Woman has a certain nature. Woman has the potency to attract men. Sexually attract men and fill them with desires. And men also have an ability to seduce women. And create attachment. So that shouldn't be done, because that's based on false ego. So therefore, one should understand one's nature and one's tendency and bring that under control in a Krishna conscious or a cultured, civilized way. Just because we're not the body, that doesn't mean we can completely ignore the temporal reality of the body. We have to come to terms with that, understand it, and conduct it properly according to our nature. This is all explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Even a man of knowledge, that means one who's enlightened, acts according to the nature he has acquired from the three modes. So first thing is to understand your nature as a body, and then to understand your nature as a spirit soul. And you know, see how they fit together. You got a temporary nature and an eternal nature, and utilize both for your spiritual elevation. It takes a bit of time. Is that a good answer or not? Okay, thank you. Any other question, comment? Okay, thank you so much. Gontrajshima Bhagavatam ki. Jai. Thank you.